Late Night Baseball, welcome in. If you're new here, that's Parker. I'm Anthony, and we're here every week talking all sorts of baseball. I pointed in certain directions. I really don't know.
I have no idea where I'm pointing. Point in both directions. I can change it in post.
The guy that's not me is Parker. I am Anthony, and we're here talking baseball and shooting the shit about baseball each and every week. Parker, how are you doing this week? How are you feeling?
I'm good, man. I'm good. We got some good baseball going on. Red Sox just pulled out game three of the series against the Tampa Bay Rays, 1-0 in like the most stressful game of the year. So I'm feeling good. I'm feeling good today. How about you? How are you doing?
I'm doing very well. And I think we're going to start off. I want to start off by having a postmortem on the weekend Red Sox White Sox series, because Parker,
we got to do this.
We're going to do this. We're going to hash this out here, because I'm going to tell you what I was not expecting. I know the Red Sox have had some offensive struggles as of late, but I was not expecting that series to go how it went, with the White Sox taking two of those three games. Chase Meidroth breaking up Garrett Crochet's no-hitter because baseball. I mean, it was a hell of a weekend, but I was not expecting it to go that way.
You weren't expecting it to go that way. I wasn't expecting it to go that way. Red Sox Nation at large was not expecting it to go that way. Will fucking Venable wasn't expecting it to go that way, dude. Like, nobody thought that the White Sox were going to take two out of three from the Red Sox. And then it took a tight win in game three, like you said, off the back of a near no-hitter from I think he lost it in the eighth. I think he did an 8 1/3 no-hit innings. Or 7 1/3 no hit innings, yeah. From Garrett Crochet, until the guy that was traded for him breaks it up. Yeah, I mean, that's baseball poetry. And thank God for Garrett Crochet. I mean, he's proven twice now. The day after he signed his extension, he pitched 8 innings against the Orioles to stop skid by the Red Sox. And then once again, the Red Sox get off the schneid off the back of an amazing outing from Garrett Crochet against his former team. So he's proven he's worth every dollar so far. So, and I'm also super glad to see that immediately Alex Cora is like, this guy's going 100 pitches on his second, third, and fourth starts of the year, because that's what he's getting paid to do, and it's time to unleash the demons.
Yeah, 100%. I'm going to sit here and defend the White Sox here for a moment. I kind of texted this to you the other day. This is a different White Sox team than last year. And I'm not saying they're coming out and they're going to win 70, 75 games even, but I'm telling you, being in the stands watching this team, they're a more fun watch. They're playing better baseball. And last year, to even take two of three from the Red Sox was not even a question that it wouldn't have happened. Not like
it
that,
happened. Don't worry. Because you went 500 against the Red Sox last year, but
true.
The fair, energy but like, is different, right?
Yes. Yes. The vibe is different. They're playing a good fundamental baseball. The fact that they're even in these games, like they're 4-12. Sure. But guess what? They're in most of these games, folks. I'm impressed.
It is a younger team. It's a more hopeful team. You got, think about the middle of that infield. Now I know Chase Meidroth's not a world beater, but it looks like he's going to be a solid big league player. I bet you he could put up a career 105, 110 OPS plus with very good defense. I can attest to his defense. I saw it 100 feet away from me when we were at spring training. Colson Montgomery looks like he's going to be a guy. The only problem that the franchise currently has is not really a problem in its current state, which is, you know, tradable assets. There are baseball executives coming out apparently saying there's only one tradable asset, and even that, Luis Robert doesn't look great. Nobody cares about that right now. The point is that you're developing a culture. You're developing a gritty, grindy culture that on the back of a young, enthusiastic, and talented manager in Will Venable. I mean, congrats to Chris Getz so far, because he looks like he's doing the right things, and I'm excited to see that playing out.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, yesterday, Parker, was one of the better days of the baseball calendar. It comes around every year. Of course, that's Jackie Robinson Day. Man, I never get tired of it, really, for a variety of reasons. But man, number 42 looms big in our baseball hearts, as he does every year. And every year they make it extra special, I feel like.
I got a super, super cold take on the whole Jackie Robinson Day. First of all, I love Jackie Robinson Day. I'm not about to come out here and say that I don't like it. I love Jackie Robinson Day. I had this 42 hat is one of my most worn hats. I love it so much. I love the movie 42. I love everything that Jackie Robinson did for the game of baseball. But on Jackie Robinson Day, can we go back to having the number be the same font and color as the uniform that it's on?
I agree with that.
I don't like the Dodger blue 42. I liked it when like the Red Sox 42 was the Red Sox font and color on the back of the jersey. But like you said, it's an amazing day. Jackie Robinson Day has meant a ton to me and my family for like my whole life. My dad's birthday is 2 days after Jackie Robinson Day, which means we have spent quite a few of those days at the ballpark. I've said that I grew up 10 minutes from the Norfolk Tide so many times in this podcast, but I did. And we went to go see Jackie Robinson Day at the Tides ballpark like all the time growing up. And it was very often my dad's birthday celebration at the same time. One of my dad's top two favorite players of all time, they're Dustin Pedroia and they're Jackie Robinson, one and two. So like it has been a really cool moment for my family for throughout my baseball fanhood, and just to watch the game really unite around this idea of, you know, maybe one day we'll all wear 42. It's already cool enough that it's the only number that's retired throughout all of Major League Baseball. I still think that Roberto Clemente should be the second one. But I think it's a spectacular tradition, and I'm always happy for it. Last year, I was at Dodger Stadium for Jackie Robinson Day, and that was an amazing experience. So
that's cool. I will say, you know, it is a cool day each and every year, and I know this is kind of tangential to Jackie Robinson Day, but ever since, I don't think people understand the depth and the impact of just generally what Negro League baseball has meant to baseball as a whole. And you know, I was obviously always appreciate Jackie Robinson Day, but what really made it kind of come to life for me was, oddly enough, when they did the storylines, the Negro League storylines in MLB The Show, man.
Yeah.
I mean, that if you guys play MLB The Show and you haven't done those Negro League storylines, you gotta do it. It is so fascinating. And there's so much with the Negro Leagues that you have never heard of that are just epic baseball stories and performances.
Yeah, like imagine Satchel Paige calling the entire like defense to sit around the mound because he knew he was about to strike out the side, and then proceeds to pitch an immaculate inning with his defenders sitting on the ground around. Like that's so cool, and it's the kind of stuff that like that would happen in like Banana Ball today. Only place that happens. Like Anthony said, if you haven't taken the time to look into all of the history of the Negro Leagues and everything that happened leading up to the color barrier actually being broken, if you haven't seen the movie 42, go out and see it.
Oh.
Another really good underrated one is the Jackie Robinson story, which actually has Jackie Robinson in it playing himself. So there's a bunch of cool stuff out there to kind of educate yourself and to get to know more of the history of the game if you haven't already. But yeah, big fan of all that going on every April 15th.
Parker, we're getting to the mid to end of April here when we really start to see what teams are made of. I think sometimes it's a little too early to judge teams. It's still, we haven't got through April yet. And so later we're going to do a fact or cap exercise. And we're going to talk about which teams are actually going to continue to perform this way. Which teams could we look at and say, hey, this is a fact. They're absolutely going to be performing this way. Or which ones is it an absolute cap? There's no way they're going to be doing this. It's completely false. We'll go over that later. So stay tuned for that. excuse me. But before I'm sounding like an old man smoker over here. Before we do that, though, I want to talk about a team that has been hot as all get out, which is the Chicago Cubs. Parker, you raised this before we started this show this week. You were like, we got to talk about the Cubbies because they are fire hot.
Yeah, and like they are, but they aren't. Like in their last 10 games, they're 5-5, but they are 12-9, and they did beat the Dodgers 16-1. So like in my book, that's pretty hot. Kyle Tucker is one of the best players in baseball, as we kind of knew he was going to be, but on a platform year, he has really shown that like I am the guy that you are going to go after this offseason. And I think that's so good for the Cubs in general, because the Ricketts spent this money. First of all, they saved money in trading away Cody Bellinger for a guy that's no longer even on the roster. Cody Petit is no longer on the roster for the Chicago Cubs, and Cody Bellinger is no longer in town. So they saved some money, and they went ahead and traded for a guy in Kyle Tucker and then traded for a guy in Ryan Pressly that makes this team significantly more competitive.
Right.
And I'm going to get into that in a second, because I do think that saving of the money as it pertains to this season is very relevant, because But for right now, I do want to focus on the fact that, yes, Kyle Tucker is exactly who the Cubs thought that they acquired when they traded for him. And on top of that, there's a little bit of whispering going around Major League Baseball right now. What have you heard about a potential Kyle Tucker extension?
So here's the deal. This whisper I'm taking as like a little itty bitty whisper. I'm not even taking all that seriously, I'm being honest with you, because this is something that came out from Hector Gomez, who,
yeah, he's spotty at best.
That's the perfect way to explain it, Parker. And literally no one else has verified this. Having said that, Hector Gomez has come out and said that there has been extension talks and that there is floating out there the number of $500 million. Is that surprising? No. You and I have always talked about if he signs an extension, you're kind of in that $500 million ballpark. And so that's not surprising. What is surprising is that, number one, that the conversations, if it's true that they're even happening, the fact that they are happening, I consider that surprising. And number two, I still am not completely bought into the Cubs investing that money. I'm sorry. I'm not going to believe it until it happens.
Yes, you can't. You can't believe it until it happens, because at this point in time, the Ricketts have not proved that they're willing to do that. They simply haven't done it for anybody. So, sure, it's possible. There are rumors. There's always going to be rumors. Until he becomes a free agent, there will be rumors. Yeah. But to be honest, that's exactly how I felt about Vladimir Guerrero Jr., and he shocked the world by signing that extension. And honestly, that's how I felt about Garrett Crochet, and he shocked the world by signing an extension. So, and those are guys in different situations. I think that Vladimir Guerrero Jr. was uniquely positioned to make way more money in an extension than he would on the free market. Mm-hmm. I think Kyle Tucker would make significantly more money in the market than he would signing an extension. So he must... If he's even considering an extension, if they're even sitting at the table, he must like it in Chicago, or at least he's waiting for them to make it worth it to like Chicago.
And I think that's what it is, right? Like, I think, because here's the deal. To me, if I'm in Kyle Tucker's shoes and I really want to maximize my value, there's nothing that says I go to free agency and I can't come back to Chicago if I love it, right? Like, I want four or five teams competing for my services and kind of and making sure you're elevating that price, because we're talking about $500 million, but you get $550 and $575 and $600 by having a bidding war. And I think you got to do that. You just got to do that for yourself.
That's exactly what happened. I mean, we just saw it with Juan Soto. We saw it with Shohei Ohtani. I think really the best example of it is Shohei Ohtani, because going into the Shohei Ohtani sweepstakes, it was like, is he going to make $400? Is he going to make $500? Try $700 million, because that's what happens when you get a bunch of teams driving up the price on each other. And that's just better for the players. And that's part of the reason why this next CBA beginning before the 2027 season is going to be so highly contested, because the owners know they do this to each other. And the less willing to spend owners also know that it's like four or five of their ranks that are like making their lives harder for the rest of them. So they're going to do their best to try to mitigate that. But I think it's good for the game of baseball. I think it's good for the players. I mean, when you get a guy like Vladdy Jr. setting the free agent market before it, how often do you really get a guy like Vladdy Jr. setting the free agent market before the season has even hit May? That I don't know if that's ever happened, especially, and it definitely hasn't happened at the level that he has, because now if I'm Kyle Tucker, the bidding starts at $500 million. Like,
correct.
That, okay, cool. 14 years, $500 million for Vladdy. I'm a better hitter than Vladdy. Let's do it. So
100%.
And whether he is a better hitter or not is up to conjecture, but you're not Kyle Tucker walking to the table saying that Vladdy's a better hitter than you in that scenario. So I don't think we see the extension, for the record. I want to go on the record to say I don't think we see the extension. I think he hits the free agent market. I think he makes around $530 to $550.
I can't argue with that. I think that's absolutely within the realm of possibility. When you brought up, in the beginning, I know how the Cubs, they're certainly hot, but I wouldn't consider them certainly firing on all cylinders. Having said that, what's making them hot, honestly, is the offense. So now, they lead baseball in run differential, and they also lead baseball in runs scored per game. The Cubs, 6.1 runs a game. The Yankees, 6.06 runs a game. They're right up there leading the pack. I mean, this is a team that just beat the Dodgers 16-1, Parker. I mean, that is It's just crazy. They got the Dodgers pitching staff for 16 runs.
Yeah, and nobody can say that yet this season except for the Cubbies. And now I was going to point out their run differential too, because it is very good. It's tops in baseball. But what concerns me now, and this kind of rolls into the next thing that we were going to talk about, but if we're talking about the Cubs, let's do it.
Yep.
You can score all the runs you want. If you're giving up a ton of runs, then that makes it very difficult to win baseball games. And that's kind of what it looks like might be in the Cubs' future with Justin Steele. It had being announced that Justin Steele is now shut down for the entire rest of the 2025 season. And God knows for how much longer in the 2026 season. We don't know exactly what elbow surgery he's getting, but we do know he's getting elbow surgery. Could be fully Tommy John, could be the internal brace procedure, or any other sort of reconstructive surgery that they're going to do to try to strengthen his elbow. But that is the problem that he's having, which stinks, because when you look at it, look at the numbers and try to argue against Justin Steele being a top five pitcher in baseball since 2021. I don't think you can.
No.
So to lose a guy like that, it's going to be catastrophic for any team, but especially for a team in the Cubs, where I think that their biggest question mark already was the pitching department, and it just gets worse from here. Now, I'll let you say your piece, but I do have a couple things I want to point out about this pitching staff before we move on.
Yeah, let's talk about the pitching staff here in a moment. Before I do that, I want to make a correction. So they won that game 16-0, and why that's significant is, and I caught this on MLB Network the other day, is that that Cubs win was the biggest shutout at home for the Dodgers in their franchise history.
No way.
Way.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow. Yeah. I mean, I wouldn't have, if you had asked me at the beginning of the season if anybody was going to beat the Dodgers 16-0 home, road, what have you, I would have said no.
No way. No way.
Yeah. Because immediately I'm like, oh, no, you'd have to do that in Colorado, and the Rockies definitely aren't doing that. So
not a chance. And Roky gave up just one run in that game, if you could believe it.
Jeez. I think Roky's been better. I think he's pitched like once since the last time we talked, but I'm going to pull up his Savant page. I think he's been better.
Let's go while you're looking that up. Let's actually pull up. You bring up, which I agree 100%. My piece is basically to agree with you, and that is that my concern for the Cubs was always that they didn't have the proper rotation to support a deep into October team. I mean, we talked about them. I mean, in the offseason, they did flirt with apparently the idea of signing a Corbin Burns. We know that that was a long shot given his situation, but right now, their rotation, we have Shota, which was always at the top, Shota Imanaga, left-hander Matthew Boyd, how about that for a name, Brown, Colin Ray, and Jameson Taillon still hanging out, just like an ever-present body in that rotation. But this is, right now, those five guys, bottom half of baseball rotation right now.
Absolutely. But when you pair it with the top five offense in baseball, it's pretty crazy the things that can happen. Now, I did want to bring up the fact that I mentioned that they freed up a bunch of payroll when they traded away Cody Bellinger for a bag of peanuts. What if they are just willing to take on kind of an albatross contract, or maybe a guy in the last year or two of arbitration who's making a shit ton of money and currently pitches in Miami and could really do a lot to shore up that rotation?
I see what you're doing.
Yeah, so I think we see the Cubs, if not outright get him, but make a very, very strong push. Maybe not even at the trade deadline, maybe prior to the trade deadline for a guy like Sandy Alcantara.
I could see it. That would be a get. Remember, this past offseason, they were talking to the Marlins about trading for him. That was a thing.
And so their relationship's already there.
So I think there's another thing that substantiates that happening, or at least substantiating the Cubs' willingness to spend if they're winning. So going back to January, okay, Ricketts had an interview with, I believe it was The Athletic, and he basically said, this was during their Cubs fan convention, and he basically said that they're willing to spend around $241 million towards the luxury tax threshold. So right now, you look at their payroll, they're at 196. So you're looking at about 50 million, give or take, of room there. Okay. And if he's saying he's willing to go to 241, I mean, that is telling, right? That's a Sandy Alcantara and then some. And yes. I would like to see them do that. I think, like you said, it serves them. If you're coming in hot in April and in May, pedal to the metal. Don't wait till July. Don't do it. Do it now. Add two starters.
In a national league that's so competitive, you have no choice. Yes. Because even as we were saying that they are a very competitive team and they've been very good, like I said, I pointed out, they're 12-9. They are only one game up on the Milwaukee Brewers for the division. So while they have played good baseball, those Brewers are good. The Reds could catch fire off the back of an incredible season that looks like is in the making for Hunter Green. Mm-hmm. You have to do it. I think you do it sooner rather than later. It's not very often you see big name pieces like that get off the board prior to the deadline, but I don't think the Cubs have any time to waste. I think that this is your Kyle Tucker year. You can't count on him any year after this. So let's see what you got.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Parker, we were talking about last week how excited we are for World Baseball Classic. Baseball to return. It's coming up next season. We're going to see if Team USA and Japan can meet in the finals again. But
we did. I think we did most of this talking off air. So I do want to point out that Anthony and I we're in the lab and we're trying to figure out how we're going to make another spring training trip next season down to hopefully at least like the quarterfinals, semifinals, maybe even the finals of the World Baseball Classic.
We are in the lab, the baseball lab. That is right. We don't have Rapsodos or anything like that. We have our brains and our
wallets.
And wallets, right, that do end at some point. But the rosters, they're starting to come out, or at least they will come out soon. They announced the coaching staff. Our main man, D-Row, is going to be managing that team again, which I'm excited for. I'm so excited for that.
Yeah.
Oh, he's one of my favorite. And that coaching staff is like a who's who of MLB legends. It's awesome.
Yeah. Hitting coach Matt Holliday, pitching coach Andy Pettit, and then a bunch of other just awesome names.
Yeah. Can't beat it. But the big thing is, which comes, I really think it's no surprise, but Aaron Judge is Captain America, you could call him, because he's captain of Team USA. I can't really say I'm surprised by that. It's obvious.
Yeah, the only other guy would have been Mike Trout, right? Because he did it last time, and
I think
everybody wants to see him be captain and win the World Baseball Classic, or at least with the idea of that is probably pleasing to most people. But I don't really blame Mark DeRosa for thinking Aaron Judge. From what this is conjecture, but I'm pretty sure that's what he wanted last WBC, and Judge was in a free agent year, so he couldn't get him. And then you ask Mike Trout. Mike Trout does a great job. Well, Aaron Judge is not a free agent this offseason. And DeRosa called Mike Trout and basically was like, I'm going to ask Judge. And according to DeRosa, Mike Trout was like, that's the guy. That's who's got to do it. And I think that that's awesome, because as disappointed as I slightly am to see that Mike Trout's not the captain, I cannot think of a more deserving person in baseball to be captain of Team USA than Aaron Judge. He has been model of how to carry yourself. He has been an incredible producer. Like, to me, it's so funny. I was talking about this with my dad, actually, and we both agreed that, like, even as Red Sox fans, Aaron Judge is firmly in that Derek Jeter. God, he's so good and he's so wholesome, and he's the guy that I want my kid to play baseball like, even though he's on the Yankees. Like, yeah, this is cool to see it. I would have liked Mike Trout, but I love Aaron Judge. So good for Judge. I'm excited for your excuse to root for him.
Well, there you go. I mean, like you said, when a guy's likable, you can't not like him. And he's just one of those guys. He is the epitome of a true baseball ambassador. He just is.
Just a little stuff about Aaron Judge. Like, Brett Gardner's son passed away, and then the next roll call they did at Yankee Stadium, Brett Gardner used to always flex to the bleacher creatures whenever they did the Yankees roll call. Well, they did Aaron Judge's roll call the next time after the passing of Brett Gardner's son, and he did the Brett Gardner flex at the bleacher creatures. And little stuff like that, man. Like, you can tell nothing gets past the guy. He's very cerebral. He's very smart. He knows what the game means to a lot of people.
Sure does. Sure does. So that'll be fun. We'll keep you posted on what our plans are for that, but we'll definitely be following all the WBC stuff here, obviously, Late Night Baseball. I want to stick on Aaron Judge for a moment, Parker. I want to get your opinion on something because, you know, nothing annoys us more on Late Night Baseball than stupid, ridiculous, made-up controversies. And, of course, because baseball writers have no chill, they always make shit up. And so I want to go to something that Juan Soto told Mike Puma of the New York Post. The New York Post, obviously a reputable news source in the United States of America.
Definitely not inflammatory and click-driven.
So this is what Soto told Mike Puma. He literally said this. I'll quote it exactly. He was talking about hitting his spot in the lineup and no longer hitting in front of Aaron Judge and instead now hitting right alongside Pete Alonso. And this is what Soto said. He said, "It's definitely different. I had the best hitter in baseball hitting behind me. I was getting more attacked and more pitches in the strike zone, less intentional walks and things like that. I was pitched differently last year." Parker, my response to that quote is, yeah, no shit. Like, I don't.
Yeah.
What's the problem here?
Yeah. I hate to be the guy. And like back when we were younger, we used to hear it a lot. Like, oh, this guy signed with the, especially as a Red Sox fan, this guy signed with the Yankees for $50 million instead of $40 million. Difference between $50 million and $40 million ain't nothing. What's he doing? He's leaving the, for, it's $10 million. So what are you going to buy with $50 that you don't get with $40? I actually think that that kind of applies when you're talking about $700 million versus $760 million to a certain extent. So like if you truly, truly wanted to make an attempt at – he said he signed with the Mets because he wanted to win. Okay. You were in the World Series with the Yankees. What else did you want? Like you could have played better theoretically and won that World Series with the Yankees. If you win that World Series with the Yankees, do you sign for less money with the Yankees? And Juan Soto has already said that that the Mets were not the biggest offer on the table. Do I believe that? Not for a fucking second. I think that he signed for the most money. And do I blame him for signing for $765 million, $805 after all said and done? No, I don't blame him at all. Yeah, go ahead and make your money. But then you cannot get on national news, which the New York Post is a national news platform, and say things like, honestly, inflammatory to your teammates. One last thing. When I say the number 1195, what number do you think I'm throwing out?
I think you're throwing out OPS.
Yeah, I'm throwing out Pete Alonso's 2025 OPS so far through 17 games. So while you may not be getting pitched differently to the degree of Aaron Judge, you are definitely getting pitched differently because Pete Alonso's batting behind you and he's hitting the shit out of the baseball. So I don't really know where one's going with this, but
okay, whatever. So, okay, well, I think we buried the lead a little bit there. Let me provide some context to everything you're saying. So what you're saying is in response to the fact that people are saying that he's like regretting signing with the Mets because he's right. In a better hitting situation than the Yankees. I'm here to tell you, if we were to sit down and do an analysis of this and look at the pitches he's getting, the areas of the zone and all of that, I would bet that he is getting favorable pitches this year compared to last year. I would bet.
Is he getting pitched better this year than last year?
I think he's getting better pitches last year.
Oh, yes. Knowing that, yes, I agree.
100%. Now, I don't know that I agree that he's like it doesn't come off as like shitting on your Met teammates. I didn't take it like that. I took it as like, yeah, no kidding. If you have Aaron Judge in front of you or behind you rather in last year, yeah, you're probably going to get better because still people are still probably afraid of Aaron Judge more than they are Pete Alonso. I didn't take it that way. I think people are making a lot of it. And personally, I think he was just stating a fact. I think we can see that in the data.
Mm-hmm. Okay, I agree. I think he's not quite having the season he would hope for so far in his first year with the Mets. He does have an 859 OPS, which is fine. It's amazing. It's mm-hmm. Rafael Devers' career OPS. But That's not a Juan Soto OPS. Last year he OPS 989, and this year he's at 859. I mean, he's always been the guy who's going to take a walk, and I think that you're going to get more of those walks because he, yeah, you would rather pitch to Pete. If you were to ask me right now, do you want to pitch to Pete Alonso or A-Rod for $1 million if you strike him out? Or not A-Rod, Aaron Judge. I'm pitching to Pete Alonso because I would rather, you know, like he's not as good of a hitter. He's a spectacular hitter. He's an incredible hitter, but he's not as good of a hitter as Aaron Judge. So yeah, I'm going to go ahead and give better pitches to Juan Soto because there's less of a chance that Pete Alonso is going to punish me for it.
Correct.
Yeah, I don't know though. I'm so sick of hearing about it. I'm so sick of hearing about who, and you know what? It's going to be a decade and a half of it. It's going to be 15 years of hearing about which team he signed with. Justin Havens, former MLB producer, currently on the Baseball Is Dead podcast, he made a great point. We have never, ever seen a player in the prime of their career take money like this to go to the other New York team and then proceed to talk about that decision so much. And if this continues, we're just going to keep hearing about it every 3 weeks for the next 15 years. So get ready.
Okay. That's not going away anytime soon.
Yeah, only when he writes his tell-all autobiography.
Oh, yeah. We're looking forward to that one. Couldn't care less. Sorry, Juan. All right. So I want to talk about a pretty big development that happened this week, Parker. You and I have been talking about this gentleman for a while. He obviously missed all of last season for an internal kind of elbow brace procedure, not a Tommy John, like a Tommy John light. And that is Spencer Strider, who came back and made his MLB debut yesterday against the Braves and or not against Braves. I'm sorry, against the Blue Jays there in Rogers Center. And Spencer Strider, he went 5 innings, allowed 2 runs and struck out only 5 in 5 innings. Why I say only 5 in 5 innings is because this is a guy that when he was in AAA this year rehabbing, this guy was over here pitching. Here, let me pull it up. 5 1/3, 5 1/3. He had in one game down there with the Gwinnett Snappers, 13 strikeouts in 5 1/3 inning, which it's AAA. Let's calm down. But still, pretty incredible. He had the strikeout pitch working for him. Not so much in his first game back, but it's just good to see him back. It's good to see the Cavmaster back.
Yeah, guy's got the best legs in MLB. I don't know that you could even ask for a better outing from him. You didn't mention it, but the Braves did lose, and Strider was the losing pitcher. He did give up 2 runs, and they lost 3-1 to Toronto, who looks like they are on something else this season. Excuse me, but I don't know if you can ask any more out of a Spencer Strider than 5 hits, 2 earned runs, a walk, and 5 strikeouts, one of those being his 500th strikeout. So congrats to him. That tallies up to a 3.6 ERA in his first start. I think we're going to see a lot of really good stuff out of Spencer Strider this season. The thing I do want to ask, though, is do you think that this is the missing piece that could turn this very young Braves season around? Because right now, the Braves are currently sitting in last place in the NL East at a 5-13 record with a -17 run differential. Where are you at on Spencer Strider fixing all their problems?
I think it's a large piece, honestly. Like if he can get cooking like he has been in previous seasons, I think that gets them a significant amount of wins and you can count on him every fifth day. Having said that, this offense just looks a lot different than it did 3 years ago. And I'm still concerned about it. I don't care how many times Spencer Strider's taken the mound. You know, you look at this lineup and it just keeps coming back to me after your top half, your Olsons, Rileys, Albies, the rest of the lineup, like De La Cruz, Jared Kelnick, Nick Allen, just so light. Even Michael Harris, who usually you can count on to anchor the bottom of the lineup, he's hitting sub .200 so far. Like if they don't turn the offense around, I don't care who's in the rotation. You're not going to be successful in a strong National League. It's just not going to happen.
Yeah, I'm with you on that big time. I don't think this is a massive ad. I think it's a massive ad in the fact that it's Spencer fucking Strider. And he's going to strike out 250 dudes probably. But you're lucky you got him back with only 3 starts missed. Like I think everybody else is on their like third time through the rotation.
Yeah.
Maybe fourth time. Everybody's pitched three times. So he's missed three starts. You could probably get like 27 starts out of this guy this year. So you're looking at basically a full season. But to your point, unless you start hitting, it's not going to happen. Ronnie's got to come back. That's fine. Albies has got to start hitting. Ozuna's got to start hitting. Riley's got to start hitting. Their team batting average right now, if you had to take a guess, what do you think it is? Going into play today. They're, so not including today.
Their team batting average. Oh, shoot. I would say,
just for context, last year it was a 243.
I think their team batting average now is probably 210.
Hmm. Better than that, 226.
Okay, interesting.
226, now, but their OPS is a 685. Yeah.
That's the killer right there. Like I just don't. I don't want to say we called it here, but
right.
All offseason we were like, what are they doing? They don't have enough offense. What the hell is Alex Anthopoulos doing? He usually
they keep
is really
just letting people
heading.
Walk.
Right. Like Alex has always been good with scouting across the league, in the major leagues, mind you, for hitters that could have rebound seasons. And he didn't even add anyone who could have a rebound season. Like he had no hitting to the arsenal. And it's showing.
No, it definitely is. 685 OPS is definitely bad. Just to point it out there, the Braves lineup is historically, at least over the last 8 seasons, I'll give them, one of the best lineups in baseball. Like, incredible lineup that just goes out there and mashes every single year. Two of those years, they OPS'd over 800 as a team, which is just insane. And 2023 was the last time they did that. Last year, they had a 724 OPS, which is a stark fall off from the 845 the year prior. 685 sure is not going to get it done for you. You got to OPS, especially from what the expectations for this team are for the division that they're in. I think you got to get that OPS closer to like 780 if you're going to be competitive. Just doesn't look like that's in the cards unless you make a move. I don't know. You need guys like Sean Murphy. You need guys that, you know, I have faith, trust, and confidence in guys like Austin Riley, Matt Olson, Ronald Acuna when he gets back. They're going to do their thing. I fully believe that. But you need the other guys in the lineup, guys like Michael Harris, guys like a Sean Murphy, guys like Ozzy Albies. You need them to be people. You need them to be major league hitters and above average bats. And I don't know. If it doesn't happen, I don't think we see the Braves in the playoffs.
Ooh, okay, let's put a pin in the Braves because I want to come back to them here in a second. We talk about what the rest of the season may look like for them. But the really fun thing popped up this week. And before I even share this, we talk about this. I've always said I'm a big fan of softball like I am baseball. Mm-hmm. I think there's a spot for it. I would be the first person to sign up for the success of a softball league in the U.S. I think that'd be so freaking cool. And Kim Ng, who we both love.
Oh my God, Kim Ng,
she is going to be the commissioner for this new women's softball league. This is so freaking cool. Nobody better.
No, nobody better. The league itself is tabbed as the Athletes Unlimited Softball League, AUSL, and it is going to be the first women's professional batted ball sports league in America, and it is looking good. If you have Kim Ng at the head of any organization, I got news for you. Your organization's in a good spot. She is one of the most successful executives in baseball. It was very strange that she was not brought on board 2 years ago to some team when she left the Marlins organization. We all were like, kind of, who's going to get Kim Ng? Because there's no way she's not a target, right?
I know.
And this starts to make a little bit more sense. These type of things do not just happen overnight. I am absolutely certain that over the last couple of years, she has been in talks with the AUSL, and I bet you that this has been her goal for a while now. Couldn't think of anybody better. So cool that the first league of its kind, the first women's softball league in America, is going to be headed up by a woman commissioner. Couldn't think of a better person to do it. Super excited for her. Hope it works out.
I really hope it does too. And I'll tell you what, I'm all in on a softball league. I think it's a great idea. I I'm looking at the schedule now because I actually looked at this a couple weeks ago and I'm reminded of it, that they're actually playing here in Rosemont, Illinois. They're going to be playing a game, and I may actually scoop up tickets for that and go. That's June 7th. I'm going to hit that up.
I didn't even know. I know so little about this. Like, what are the teams?
So do I. Like, I'm literally just on the surface of it. Like, they have the Talons, the Bandits, the Volts, the Blaze, and I think it's not necessarily like I can't find anything about the teams being like tied to cities.
It might be like a touring type.
Right. I think that's what it is. Okay. So, like, if we pull up the Bandits here, yeah, like, they have a whole roster already for the Bandits. Like, this is really cool. Like, I'm going to go see them.
Yeah, that should be a lot of fun. For those of you who have never watched, like, high-level softball before, the Women's Softball World Series is incredible. It's so much fun. And a lot of these players are just going to port right over from the Women's World Series to the AUSL. So it's super cool that all of them have a professional avenue now. Until recently, that wasn't the case. So awesome to see people being able to follow their dreams. That's just as sappy as I can get. I think that's one of the coolest parts about this whole thing.
Hell yeah. I'm so excited. That's like 25 minutes for me. Super cool. Bandits are one of the four inaugural teams. So it looks like they are just like teams and not necessarily tied to a city.
Okay.
That's freaking cool. All right. Well,
Blaze, Volts, Talons. Yeah.
Yeah. That's we'll be cool. Following that. That'll be neat. All right. Let's end with this today. We're already 41 minutes in, and I want to play a little game here. We like to have some fun here and play these stupid-ass games. Let's do this now. So let's play our little version of fact or cap. And, of course, by that, I mean a fact, things that we think are true and that will continue on the same, or cap, meaning that, nope, this is bullshit. This will not hold true. This is false. And so what I mean by that is I want to talk about four teams specifically. And, Parker, I want to talk about, hey, is this the team that we're seeing now? Is the team we expect to go to be the case for the next, 5 months? That would be a fact. Or cap, no, this isn't going to stay this way. This team's going to turn it around or kind of absolutely fall off a cliff. So I want to start with the Baltimore Orioles. The Baltimore Orioles right now are last in the AL East. They're 6-10. They have a -9 run differential. Fact or cap?
I gotta say that I don't know. I was never in the picking the Orioles to win the division camp. I was never in the camp of they're going to have an incredibly strong showing this season. I don't even remember really if I had them in the playoffs. If I had to guess, I think I didn't. Maybe I did. I don't remember. Either way, they're a bubble team in my head. And I think their ceiling this year is a bubble team. And right now, they are not playing like a bubble team. They're playing like a last place team. And the whole problem behind all of that and the reason this is happening is honestly because they just don't have the pitching. And we knew that this was going to be the case coming in. Go back and look at our AL East preview. We talked about their pitching. It was really the only thing we talked about. We kind of was like, yeah, the lineup's going to line up and that's going to be what it is. And then we didn't know what was going to happen. I think that this is fact. I think that this is the Orioles this season. Hot take, but
I really hate that I agree with you, because here's the deal. I never, ever want people to lose their jobs. Let's make that very clear. However, if you own the Orioles and you have Mike Elias heading that baseball operation and you're wasting these young players' primes by not getting pitching, that's a fireable offense. Because guess
Gunnar Henderson's only going to cost league minimum once.
Correct. And I know you're not going to want to hear it, but I know you'll agree with me. The fact of the matter is Garrett Crochet should not be pitching for the Red Sox. He should be pitching for the Orioles, and they should have scooped him up 2 years ago.
Imagine a world where the Orioles trade all of their a lot of their prospect capital, not even all of it, a little like half of their like major prospect capital, and bring on board a Garrett Crochet and a Sandy Alcantara. World Series bound in the next 3 years.
100%. You can etch it in stone. I think they just absolutely neglected the pitching. I think Mike Elias is proving that he is a guy that can build a team but can't sustain a team. He can build it as a rebuild, but he can't bring a winner with major league talent. I I'm super concerned. If I were the Orioles, if they continue on this track for this year, it would be I don't want to be dramatic, but it would be a disaster.
I agree. It would be a very big failure on the part of the Orioles. The good news is, though, for Orioles fans listening, even if this season is a dumpster fire, you still have one of the most incredible young talent cores in baseball. Mm-hmm. And even if they're all slightly above league average players and none of them are the MVP candidates that we all thought every one of them was going to be, let's say Gunnar Henderson is who, you know, 1 to 2 wins less than he was last year. And everybody else is a 110 OPS plus guy. You get some pitching and that's a really good lineup. That is a very, very good baseball team if you get some pitching behind them. So a couple starters and we could be looking at a completely different thing next year.
Yeah, could be. All right, Parker, next one here. I want to go to the AL West, and I want to talk about the Angels. The Angels right now are second in the AL West. Granted, they're just above 500 at 9-7. They have a -7 run differential, but some of the younger players they have on that roster right now are surprising some folks, and they're actually hitting the ball quite well. They've had some solid starts out of veteran Kyle Hendricks, who's definitely at the end of his career. Parker. Angels, fact or cap?
Weirdly enough, man.
Oh, don't do it. Come on.
I think it really might be fact. I want to point out one particular guy that gives me a lot of hope for this team. Logan Ohapi.
I love
that. Logan Ohapi has been incredible to start the season, and I really don't see him tailing off too hard. And when you look at the fact that this lineup kind of does have some guys in it that can hit, guys like, I don't know, you ever heard of Mike Trout? If he stays healthy, we're looking at a pretty decent season so far. Jorge Soler is still there, and he can hit the ball around a bit. And if you do get a decent season out of some of these guys in the rotation, here's the other thing that gives me hope. You don't need very great seasons out of them, because in case you haven't noticed, the division's kind of shit. And every single team in it has a negative run differential. So... who knows? Maybe this is the ultimate downfall of the Houston Astros. We know the Mariners can't score any runs, so you don't really need pitching against them anyway. And the Rangers have sort of underperformed to this point. Granted, they do sport a 10-7 record at time of recording, but like they're 5-5 in their last 10. So like, I don't know. I think that I think I might be drinking the Angels' Kool-Aid.
I would like to know what hardcore drugs are in the Angels Kool-Aid, because I am not buying it. I'm not buying it for a few reasons. Number one is I have learned as a White Sox fan. Let me remind you about the I believe it was 2021 your mean Mercedes fiasco.
Oh boy.
Don't get too excited about players that come up in the majors and start cooking, because it will always revert to the median. It always will. And I look at a guy like Kyron Perez, who's hitting .366, 5 home runs, 5 stolen bases. He's absolutely on fire. Rookie out of nowhere. I think that's going to fall off. I think
pitchers will adjust.
Productive. Pitchers will adjust. It happens. Mike Trout, I'm so excited he's back. I love that he has 6 homers. Don't love that he's batting .186. He's back basically just hitting homers and that's it.
That's what he did last year too, before he got hurt.
true. But that isn't a well-rounded Mike Trout as we know him. And I look at that rotation and yeah, they're having great starts, but I mean, you look at like a Kyle Hendricks, he had a great start last outing, but he's still above a 4 ERA. I think his last name is Jack Kochanowicz.
You're not on the Jack Kochanowicz fucking train, buddy.
I'm not on the train. I'm barely at the station, my friend. I just am not entirely sold. The Angels are one of those teams where if they are doing this through the middle of May, I'll show up to the station. I'll show up. Until then,
okay.
I'm pessimistic.
Interesting. Okay, I think that it would be super fun. I mean, I think you would.
It will. It'll be fun.
If the Angels do this, I think it'd be super fun. I'd love to see Logan Ohapi become a guy. Like, I really, really am bought in on him in particular. I think he's a super fun guy to watch play. I don't think he's going to keep one dotting. his OPS for the entire season, which is what he's currently doing with a 186 OPS plus. He's not going to continue to do that, especially now as a catcher. But I do think it's fun. I hope that it continues to be fun. And I think that the Angels being good would be refreshing. And I think I'm just making excuses at this point. So we should move on.
Well, I know it would track. It would really track, because there's nothing that would make more sense in my life if the Angels were a winning team this year because they acquired Tim Anderson and Yoan Moncada, who did jack shit for the White Sox over the last several years, to go to the Angels and have a winning team. I call bullshit right now. Don't. Anyway.
Not at all bitter. 3.7% odds to make the postseason, less than 1% to win the World Series right now for the Los Angeles Angels of Anaheim, California.
We've seen crazier things.
Yeah. Yep. Also, Wash. Come on. We're all in on the Wash train.
Oh, I love – everyone loves Wash. How can you not? I love the guy.
Yeah. Ugh. Ron Washington, manager of the Angels. Hope that guy does great. No cell phones. Absolutely no, cell no phone. Fucking no, cell phones.
No cell phones. Not at all. All right. So let's go on to our next one. I have two more for you. So I want to talk about – let's stay in the West but jump to the NL. And right now, if you were to look at the NL West standings, you have the Padres leading with 12-4 record. They're two games in front of both the Giants and the Dodgers. But I want to focus in on the Giants because they're 12-5 in the thick of it. Their run differential, Parker, plus 27. All right. They're better than the Dodgers by 20 runs. All right. So the Giants coming out of nowhere, fact or cap?
Cap. I got cap on this one. I don't think Jung-Hoo Lee is the next Aaron Judge. Call me crazy. Call me crazy. Let me pull up his Savant page. Hold on. I had it up earlier. But where do you think he is on bat speed metrics as far as Jung-Hoo Lee?
I would say he's 55th percentile.
12th percentile.
Are you kidding me?
12th percentile bat speed. 68.5 miles per hour.
Okay, sorry. I heard you wrong. I thought you meant like actual like sprint speed. Sorry.
Bat speed. No, bat speed.
What is
Where is
sprint
he at sprint speed? What'd you say for sprint speed? What'd you say, 55?
I said 55.
Put some respect on the grandson of the wind's name. He's 71st percentile sprint speed, sir.
He's all beating right, Jake Berger Mister, in the race, okay? All right, calm down. You're the one that just shit on him right away when we mentioned Giants. You're over here like fucking Jung-Hoo Cap over here. Relax.
I love Jung-Hoo Lee. Right now he is hitting to the tune of .343 with a .400 on-base percentage, .657 slug with a 1.057 OPS. To the tune of 3 home runs. I just don't know if I think that his career numbers of .773 OPS is closer to what we're going to get from him with good defense. I think that that's kind of who he is. I do love me some Jung-Hoo Lee. I think he's a great player. I just don't think that he's going to be this for the whole season. And that's a kind of a lot of their lineup at this point, considering like Willy Adames, Matt Chapman, maybe Helly Ramos. Those are the other guys that you're looking at as far as like who's going to contribute offensively to this team. And those, none of those guys are somebody that if my team signed them to be my 3 or 4 hitter, I'd be like, cool. Awesome. That sounds awesome.
Right. Right. I,
every one of those guys is like is somewhere between either a 2 hitter or a 6 hitter.
True. Now, having said that, I struggle with the Giants right now because I agree with all that you're saying. I don't think it's sustainable, particularly from an offense standpoint. If you look at just their ratings for their offense and their starting pitchers, their rotation, they're 19th in average in the league, 20th in on-base percentage. And for their starters, they're actually 22nd in baseball in ERA. Not great. Hits no. per nine, 23rd. Not great. But something's not clicking in my brain because you look at their schedule and what they've done. Okay. They opened the season taking two of three from the Reds. Then they went on and they swept the Astros. They swept the Mariners. They took two of three from the Yankees. And right now they're in a series with the Phillies where they're leading that four-game series 2-1. Like, they're putting some runs on the board and they're winning. I would feel differently if they were winning, if their schedule was just a favorable schedule, but they're winning against some good teams. So I think it's too early, much like I said about the Angels, it's the opposite direction. I think it's too early to call cap on them because they're showing up and playing meaningful baseball against good teams.
You know, you have a point there. Because I'm looking at Savant right now, and I'm clicking around on other players. Right now, it's Luis Matos, not Helio Ramos. So looking at Helio Ramos, his OPS right now is 680. So you'd think he would improve upon those numbers. And Willy Adames right now is only OPSing 580, a 581. So like probably going to see some improvement from him. I just clicked off of it, but Matt Chapman somewhere in the 775 range as far as OPS. So like that's kind of who he is. That's actually kind of on the high end of who he is. But he's going to keep playing incredible defense. Who else is going to contribute to this team offensively? I mean, Patrick Bailey's there. Wilmer Flores, like there's nobody on this team, not a single person that I'm like, I want that guy taking at bats in the ninth inning with the game on the line. None of them. And that's what concerns me when your pitching is in the 20s as far as ERA ranking.
Yeah, I agree with that. And they're also just, it's how do I explain this? Beyond their starting nine in that lineup, you go to see what depth they have behind that, and it's non-existent. So if any of those one guys go down, next man up doesn't really exist for them, unfortunately. So I just think they're just more, it's a more risky scenario, more plausible that they will ultimately cap, because I don't think they can sustain 162 at this level.
No, I don't think so either. I think the first Giants Dodgers series is going to teach us a lot about this team.
That's a good point. Yeah.
Because when this lineup comes in contact with some really good pitching and that rotation comes in contact with some really good hitting, I think they're going to be put in their place pretty quickly.
Yeah. Good point. Good point. All right. Last one. We're going to bring it back to a team we were talking about earlier. So I saved it for last. The Braves, Parker, we talked about them a lot already. I'm not even going to give a spiel on it. Everyone knows what we think about the Braves, but honestly, let's have a real heart-to-heart here. Braves, fact or cap?
I had to think about this one, and literally in the last 5 minutes, I have talked myself around in circles about whether or not I'm going to do fact or cap on this one, but I think their current standing is cap. When I really go back and think about it, we're still talking about a rotation that has Spencer Strider. We just saw him come back and do good things. We still talk about a rotation that has Chris Sale. Spencer Schwellenbach looks promising. And that is the weak part of there. Let's not forget that is the weak part of this team. Mm-hmm. The strength of this team, the thing you're going to count on day in and day out come May, June, July, August, is the lineup that has not performed yet. This is the same thing. What got me around to this side is I was talking to a friend the other day, especially after the White Sox series that the Red Sox played, and then the 16-1 loss that they just had against the Rays. I was talking to somebody the other day, and they're like, "What's going on with your team, man?" And I told them that what I told them is the same thing I feel about the Braves. If it was the pitching that was the problem, I would be very concerned, but it's not. It's the offense not showing up. And I'm going to say it for the Red Sox, but it applies to the Braves. If the Red Sox aren't hitting, wait until the warmer months at Fenway. That lineup's going to come around. They're going to start putting up 12 runs on you know, once a week, and it's going to start feeling like more and more of a ball club. This Braves lineup is way too good to not start producing. They've started cold. I just don't think that they are cold enough and that they will stay cold long enough to truly tank this team's success this year. I think that the thing that will sink the Braves eventually is a lack of pitching if it does happen, but the Braves lineup is just too good. Just don't forget this Braves lineup has Austin Riley, Matt Olson, Ronald Acuna Jr., Michael Harris Jr., Ozzie Albies. Like, This lineup's too deep to not hit. Eventually, they're going to hit, and they're going to start winning a lot of baseball games because of it.
Yeah, I'd have to agree with you. I think it's just too early to rule them out, and I have a little more faith in the Braves than I think the record shows. And I keep going back to schedules, but I think schedules, for me, I feel like they're important because it kind of, if you're a manager sitting there planning 162 games, you sure as hell are looking at the schedule and knowing where your kind of longest, kind of hardest kind of weeks are and where you have the opportunity to pick up a good chunk of wins. And guess what, folks? They're coming up on their window to get a ton of wins. They open the season, guys, with the Padres, the Dodgers, the Phillies, the Blue Jays, the Rays, like all kind of tougher series. But if you look at the next couple weeks, when we're looking at a 5-13 schedule, but they're coming up on 3 against the Twins, 3 against the Cardinals, 3 against the Diamondbacks, that's a little harder, 3 against the Rockies, right? And then they have this is an opportunity where after this next 2 weeks they could be 11-13, you know what I mean? Yes. Like, that's in the ballpark.
And then when you're 2 games below 500, you're a good week away from being a playoff team. Like, you do need to have those good 2 weeks. You need to have that good week after that. But, like, if there's a team with the lineup, if this was in the middle of the season last year, if this was an August stretch in last year and you didn't know their record and you said that the Braves were going into series against the Rockies, the Diamondbacks, who else did you say? The Twins, Cardinals, you'd be like, oh yeah, Braves are going to win like 60% of those games. Well, if they do that, now they're a contender again. So
correct.
Maybe it doesn't click right now. Hopefully it does, because you, like we said last week, you can't win the division in April, but you certainly can lose it. And they're close. Like, they're getting closer to losing it than setting themselves up to win it. But I just think that this lineup's too proven.
I agree. Here's something I think you and I need to keep an eye out for, and I recommend everyone keeps an eye out for the Braves. I think the part of the schedule coming up here that's really going to give us a litmus test for them, honestly, is May 12th through 22nd. Mm-hmm. Why? Well, in that 10 days, they play the Nationals 7 times. All right.
You got to win 5 of those games.
You have to. And in between, you have 3 at Boston. All right. So honestly, if you want to get ahead in this division and make up lost ground, you need to win at least 5 or 6 of those 7 games against your division rival. If they do not do that in that 10 days, I think we're having a different conversation.
Yep. And you know what a good, you know what really tends to wake up a lineup? A good 3-game series in Boston. As the weather starts to warm up, that'll wake up a bunch of lineups.
There you go. There you go. Oh, my goodness, Parker. We should, you know what? We should do this again next week if you're up for it.
I think so. You know what's funny is we were at like the 40-minute mark, and I was like, how long is this episode going to be? Yeah, of course, we run our freaking sucks, and now it's 1 hour and 2 minutes in.
We're always pretty good at timing it while not timing it. We don't time it here, folks. It's just magic. This is what we do here.
We talk until my contacts dry out, typically. Right around now is when I'm like, all right, time for bed.
Yeah, 1 hour of contact time. That's what we're working with here, folks. All right, well, we'll be back next week. Parker will have a new set of contacts. We'll be here for 1 hour. Catch you next week, folks. Take care.